Your Partner in Success Radio is a free business podcast with host Denise Griffiths. It's all about great stories, conversation, and context to help you move your business and life forward with actionable tips and advice from her guest experts. To listen and subscribe, just find us on iTunes, Google Play, or wherever you consume your podcasts.
Welcome to Your Partner in Success Radio. I'm your host, Denise Griffiths, and this podcast is ranked in the top 2% of the most popular podcasts in the world. And honestly, it's all because of my incredible guests. And I am honored and blessed to share time with people who are at the top of their game, and they come here willing to help you get where you want to be in life and in business. These are not people who hold back. Their goal is to share with us the essence of peak performance, and boy, do they. So today our topic is how to raise our game as communicators with my guest, Michelle Gladio. And raising our game as communicators is the best way to make a difference in our careers and relationships, but it takes courage to find our voice, open up, and invite others to open up to us. This is absolutely true, by the way. As a lifelong communication coach, Michelle has discovered four obstacles that keep us from becoming the best communicators that we can be. And those four, these are important. So if you have a pencil, write them down. Hiding, fear of exposing our supposed weaknesses. Defining, and I'll get her to define these for us. Rationalizing and settling. That's a big one. I think too many of us just settle because we don't quite know what we're doing, or we have imposter syndrome, or just so many other things that's going on. So Michelle is the author of Communicate with Courage, Taking Risks to Overcome the Four Hidden Challenges that I just mentioned. And this book is on my desk as we speak. Michelle, welcome to Your Partner in Success Radio. I'm honored to have you here. And thank you for sending your book to me. And by the way, y'all, if you hear a cat screaming, that is my cat, the Vicar. And he is playing with his bottle cap, and he's just going to make that noise. There's nothing we can do about it. He's very loud. So, Michelle, thank you for being here.
Hi, Denise. It's awesome to be with you. Thanks for having me.
I've been really looking forward to this. For anybody who's paying attention, this is the final interview of 2022. We are marching into 2023. I can't even say that. It's like, how did that happen? And this is a terrific topic for the end of the year. So I'm looking forward to this.
Me too.
Okay, so before I hammer you with all kinds of questions, I've got a list. You ought to see my notes.
Woo!
Why?
Let's do it.
Tell our audience a bit about yourself and why you're here today, what you want to share with them, what you need them to know.
Well, hi, everyone. I'm one of those very lucky people who have figured out a job, kind of created a job that I love. I was after graduate school at Purdue University, I studied organizational psychology and industrial technology there. I came back to my hometown of Fort Wayne, Indiana, which is about a 300,000 person city, the second largest in Indiana in the northeast corner of the state, and started teaching college right away as a young adjunct professor. I was 23, and eventually, while teaching, found jobs as a corporate human resources and corporate training director. Really enjoyed that. We'll always be grateful for that experience. But in about 2004, I was spending all of my vacation time and weekends teaching continuing studies courses at our local universities. I would do the design and presentation, and they were usually 3 hours long, all kinds of topics, anything related to communication, leadership, business writing, presentation skills, conflict management, think about human communication. That's what I love. And this career that I have now is based on, I will say, a courageous step in 2004 to leave the confines of corporate America and the security with the insurance, you know, and the car allowance and the various things I had been, and just go for it and see if some of these part-time seminars I was teaching sort of as a side hustle could become a full-time life. And that's when Gladio Consulting was born. Difficult to spell. G-L-A-D-I-E-U-X. It's French, and I named the company after my parents, both deceased and both huge influences in my life and in how I communicate and try to help others communicate. So we've grown now to be a team of 10. We're located throughout the Midwest, and we offer executive coaching, which is also regular people coaching. I like to call it executive coaching because everybody's a leader and can make a big difference in their own way. We also offer team training in a bunch of different topics and strategic planning and process improvement services. So we're blessed to travel around the United States and work in every industry and nonprofits and government, you know, because we can all be better communicators. And until our last breath, we should be trying to be better message senders and receivers. So that's me.
Oh, listen, thank you. I agree with you. And I wanted to ask you, because you were talking about you had this at 23, really? I am so impressed.
Yeah, I was trying to look older, Denise. Those were the days.
Oh. I bet those days just looking. You know, we all did. I remember when I was 17 trying to look 21, I didn't drink.
Mm-hmm.
But I wanted to hang around mm-hmm. with my friends who did. So it was
mm-hmm.
just silly,
mm-hmm.
the things that we do to ourselves. But it occurs to me that, and I wanted to ask you this question, you had this terrific job. I mean, you were stable at a very young age. And then you decided to kind of branch out and do your own thing. And that is courageous. It really is. How long did it take you for you to understand that this is really where you wanted to go? And you could ditch the 9-to-5 job, which wasn't a 9-to-5, obviously. But how long did it take, and how frightened were you? Because a lot of people do this. I've done it. And for about 10 minutes, I would scare myself to death and then just say, nope, I'm going to do it. Was that something you said, that I'm going to do it?
Oh, how long did it take me? I think I knew for a few years, still operating as a corporate HR and training director in the warehousing and robotics industry, very male-dominated profession. I was really enjoying the challenge of trying to help make these companies' cultures more inclusive, and I think had a way of relating, being the only woman in top management at one of those companies. I was hanging in there because I I wanted to represent, you know, the 3.5 billion women in the world. I wanted to make those guys see that we bring important ideas and are absolutely just as capable in business, and I was a very young person as well. So I'm trying to change the culture, and then I wasn't afraid because I realized that if I could share my advice and enthusiasm and researchability and coaching and training skills with more companies, then we have a greater effect. So I believe it or not, I didn't feel fear, but I did have some friends, I think, that maybe wanted me to be afraid because they asked a lot of questions about that. I think they thought I was a little nuts, you know. Aren't you afraid was the most common question I got, and I just felt something in my heart. It was almost like a vocation. And I went to Catholic schools growing up, and I remember they had us pray a lot, Denise. We were always asked to pray to get a vocation, to be a nun for the girls or a priest for the boys. And I prayed, but I didn't feel the calling to be a nun. I did like the fact that they got to wear black a lot, and I loved that they were teachers and didn't have to do their hair. And I liked a lot of things about the nun life, but I also liked boys. And so that was out for me, but I knew I wanted to teach. I knew I wanted to teach. So when it came time for me to attempt to start a business, and it was just a sole proprietorship, so I didn't have anyone else counting on the work, right? And I knew I could always go back. You know, if you're willing to work hard, you're going to make it. I could have found a job as a server again. I waitressed all through college. I taught ballet all through college. I knew there were other things I could do, but I wanted to give this calling a try.
And I love that you're sharing that because, listen, when I first started, you know, I was writing and coding in HTML, then WordPress came along. I'm a web developer by trade. Nobody in my family understood it, but God bless them, they didn't question it. They just said, well, keep us posted. You know, nobody nagged at me and said, what are you thinking? I was kind of waiting for it, but it never happened.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a good thing because I really did not want to have any kind of fallout with my family. And then down the road, they went, oh, I see what you do. But it took a while.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's, I hear that story from a lot of folks who are blooming where they were meant to bloom, that maybe others wouldn't have understood it. But they followed
right.
it, right? They followed that little whisper. And courage is like that. Courage is not something anyone can give us. Courage is a call. You feel the fear, and that's when you know, oh, I'm a little scared here or a lot scared. And that's when you know, hold on, I have something innate. I have courage to summon. And the more often we call on it, the easier it becomes to call upon and the better we get at using it, right? And sometimes we fail when we summon our courage, and sometimes we succeed. And I like to tell my coaching clients, if it's a tough conversation, what I'm doing now here, I know we're being recorded, but I'm kind of putting my hands out in front of me, almost in what I would call ballet sort of first position. I'm making a circle in front of me so that I'm containing my own space here about, you know, a foot and a half outside of, away from my chest. This space, like holding a big beach ball in front of me, this is my responsibility. I will be brave in my part of the conversation or the presentation or the listening. And what the other human does is not within my control, but I can attempt to influence the quality of our communication if I take responsibility for summoning my own courage. And that's the thing with these hidden challenges. You know, people rationalize, well, they're not going to listen. It won't make a difference. I'm not a good speaker. I don't know how to say the right thing in the email. So I'm not going to try. And that hurts me, you know, deep inside, because life is so stinking short. Even if we get to live to 95, it's
right.
so short. Make your move while you're here. And I think that, you know, in every loss, there's a gift if you can find it. And I think one of the reasons that I can summon my courage, or I try to, is I think of loved ones lost. I want to honor their legacy, you know, named my company after them. But I just learned quickly, like, wow, that's that. That's goodbye, or at least goodbye for now. And I won't have another chance to speak to them in this lifetime. I had one of my coworkers call me up kind of randomly right before Christmas, and I was doing my usual Santa's workshop in the dining room table. Looks like a bomb exploded, and I'm maybe procrastinating a little on shopping and wrapping things for the next day. And my coworker Jason calls me, and he wanted to just say, you know, we don't always get the opportunity. You don't know how long you'll have an opportunity, but I want to say how much I appreciate the way you pushed me to be a brave communicator this year. And I'm getting a little emotional thinking about it, because he's very cool as a cucumber. You know, guys in general, I think, are maybe not raised to be as emotive, right, or as expressive, and it just made my day. It made my day. It was a brave thing for him to do, and touched me deeply. And of course, it's vice versa. I wouldn't be the person I am without knowing him. We all stand on everybody's shoulders. But urge our listeners and the followers of this great podcast, with all of the stories and conversation and context that I enjoy that you provide, I urge them, our listeners, to take a risk today. And you can start easy. You know, why don't you start with a positive? Why don't you notice? Try noticing something someone has done that you admire. And then whether you write on a piece of paper or a card, or you text or you email or you speak directly or you leave a voicemail, let them know what it is you admire or appreciate and why. And that's it. Use their name, what you admire or appreciate, why you think it's cool or helpful. And then say thanks in your own way. Maybe you rock, or keep it up, or thanks for the positive example, or I'm thinking of you, and then sign it. So that's a four-step praise recipe we could all use today. And it does feel a little risky, because sometimes it's easier just to complain. I mean, have you noticed that, Denise? No matter what the weather is, you can go stand in line at the supermarket and go, good gosh, it's so cold. I'm so tired of this humidity. It's 90 degrees. you'll always find another human ready to go, I know. You know, pessimism is easy to find.
I live in the deep south, and we have gone in the space of about a week from 19 degrees, which really doesn't happen here. We typically get about 5 days of winter, and they're not always in a row. But during Christmas, they were definitely in a row, and we went from 19 degrees to day before yesterday, I think, to about 70 degrees, full humidity, and my hair was at a 9. I didn't complain. I thought it was funny.
Wow.
It is what it is. I mean, I've got very curly hair, and if I make the mistake of brushing it, which I try not to do, I just use one of those big hair picks, I turn into Hagrid hair. It's terrorist hair. It's very entertaining. I mean, you can't just whine and cry about everything because that hurts you. It hurts your body. It hurts your stomach. It hurts your mind. Just stop it.
Ooh, that's
find
a good
something
point. It hurts your stomach.
Neat.
It hurts your mind. It hurts your heart.
It hurts everything.
Yes,
so
Indiana.
What you're,
same deal. 20 below wind chills, and now today we're going to be around 50, and I'll step outside for a walk later and take in the beauty and think about what a miracle. If I'm tuned in to my blessings, you know, and think about the miracle and then look around and go, there's all these other people, even the people that test me, frustrate me, loved ones can infuriate us. But usually the people we love the most are the people we have the most difficult conflict with. Every conflict there to teach us something important. And in my book, it's called Communicate with Courage, Taking Risks to Overcome the Four Hidden Challenges. I write a love letter to conflict, and it's from the heart, and I'm just thanking conflict for what it taught me and what it teaches us. So I'm trying to look at even the frustrating folks in my life as teachers. I mean, and I need to work on my patience. It's definitely not a character trait I have, and I wish that I could go to the local drugstore and get a bottle of pills of patience. I would take one every day, but I'm understanding my own strengths and weaknesses as a communicator more, I think, every year that I live, and I want to help others do that through the book.
And see, what you're talking about right now is what you describe in communication as a full body, full mind, full-hearted effort. And I'm with you, patience, not a strong suit. I mean, and I argue with everything and everybody just because I can. I argue with my nav system. She is not the boss of me. No, I'm not going left. I get lost all the time. So I leave early so I can get lost and turn back around. But patience has always been something that I strive to, I don't know, master. And I've given up on it. Yeah, I know that it's not really going to happen. But impatience for me is a lot of where, honestly, impatience is where a lot of my God winks come from. I don't even know how to describe it. When I'm thinking and when I'm being impatient about something, and I will turn it over to my subconscious for review, or I'll ask the ceiling. I'll say, okay, this is bothering me because I'm speaking to spirits or God or whoever, but I'm speaking out loud.
Sure.
And I'm speaking to my ceiling or my ceiling fan, whatever I happen to be looking at. And do you know, patience is not required because those answers always come back to me at some point. Always.
That's beautiful. We each have a very unique and important voice, regardless of what other humans who were taller than us when we were small, right? People who could influence our self-esteem development, regardless of whether we got positive or negative messages about ourselves from them, we have a wholly unique voice and limited time to use it. But while we're here, unlimited opportunities to practice. I've read some studies that show that most adults make 2,000 to 3,000 decisions a day. And you can think about that as what time, you know, do I want to hit snooze or get up? What shirt do I pull on? What's for breakfast? Easy, less high-stake decisions. And then we have the higher-stakes decisions about how we communicate with our bodies, our body language, our written word, our spoken word. And I think we might as well try to pull off some pro moves with confidence and poise while we're here. And I wonder, Denise, would you let me just read a chapter from the book to describe what a pro move is?
Either you do it or I was going to. I'd rather you did it. I've got it marked.
Okay.
So, yes.
Okay. Well, and I'm going to, Chad, be just honest with you because you are so fun and easy to talk to. This term pro moves that I teach all the time, it was my fantasy football team name for many years. We're Colts fans up here in Indiana. And, you know, my friends and I get together and watch football and drink some beer on Sundays during football season. We have a fantasy football league, and I'm always dead last or close to it in it, but I like my team name, it's Pro Move. And I thought, well, isn't that what we want as communicators? So here's the deal from the introduction. Keep your eyes peeled for Pro Moves. You'll see them sprinkled throughout the book with time-tested favorites concluding every chapter. A Pro Move is a communication attempt, a way to send or receive messages more deftly than the average bear. It's a good try that might flop or that you might pull off with flying colors. Either way is okay. A pro move is a communication strategy others might see as involving too much trouble or skill to undertake, so they walk on by, missing a chance to get closer to their communication potential. Making a pro move requires passion for learning and a desire to improve your life, your surroundings, or someone else's life. It often means you'll use self and other knowledge in the action you're taking or deciding not to take. For example, you know your preference when communicating is to do or say X, but you read a situation to call for Y, so you zig when you're used to zag. Maybe you stand out, stand up, or stand down, but it's not the easy choice. What is it then? It's the pro move. More of those in our lives. I want more of those. And I get so proud of myself, Denise. For example, obviously I'm a talkative person. I get so proud of myself when even when I disagree, I might zip my lip and let the other person finish what they are telling me, even though I disagree or I think they're incorrect. And that is something I'm really working on. I don't mean to be rude, but I sometimes have a hard time, you know, sharing the floor.
Well, and I love what you just said about that because, listen, I disagree with a lot of things and a lot of people or what they're saying in that particular moment. But I have learned by listening and then filing it away and, kind of going back and going, let me think about that a little bit more. Oh, I see what they were trying to say. I'm probably never going to fully agree with it, but now I'm not scratching my head and saying, what the heck was that? So my thing about this podcast in particular is that I need to listen better. I need to listen in between the lines. And that's what this podcast has taught me. You know, all of my guests that come here, I have learned to really deeply listen to you. And I consider that a gift because I wasn't a great listener before.
And I commend you for your courage in being willing to see your shadow self, some call it, or the dark side, which resides in all of us. Every strength we have is married to, welded to, ingrained with, however you want to picture that. I'm taking my hands and clasping them together. My fingers are intertwined. Your gifts are directly entwined with your weaknesses. So the challenge is to accept ourselves as we are as communicators and to try each day as we make a couple thousand decisions, many of them about communication, to try to stretch outside our comfort zone into a less comfortable place. And yes, you can be comfortable while you grow, but some of the hardest stuff requires us to look at our weaknesses. And that is why I reject sometimes very constructive criticism. And that is why we all reject destructive criticism sometimes, but if we can look for the little kernel of truth, okay, yes, that is that part of what you're saying. I own that, and I want to work on that. You know, freedom exists beyond that, and gifts that we can't tell your listeners, our listeners here, what they will be, but I can tell you with certainty after coaching, gosh, now for what, 25 years or so, and thousands of people. They come back to say, oh, I did look at, you know, when I accepted and looked at that weakness and started working on it, do you know what happened? And it's, I got this opportunity that I wanted to get in my career. My personal life changed. My relationship changed. trust was born or trust grew. Just outstanding things can happen. We will need, however, to go investigate and get some data about how we're coming across. And there's there are a lot of tools out there on our website that we'll talk about probably later before we conclude.
Right.
But people can find some of that, some of the resources. Or you could just ask someone who loves you or doesn't like you or loves and doesn't like you, right? Because that's true, too. What could I work on? The question is, what could I work on as a communicator?
To me, if you're communicating, you're also networking. And you may not mean to, but you are. When you're having conversations with people or you're chatting back and forth through Facebook Messenger or LinkedIn, you're not just communicating, you're connecting, and you're finding more about that person. You're finding out more about you. And, you know, it's just, you can't just kind of sit behind your keyboard and look at what people are doing and not communicate with them and say, hey, I love your book, or I really understand what you said there, or you know what, I don't quite get it. Can you tell me a little bit more? There's so many ways to communicate, so many ways. And we've got keyboards.
Absolutely.
Use them. Use them for good. I'm telling you right now, do not get nasty on your
keyboard. Use them for good. Yes, amen to that. You know, we create a lot of workbooks. I kind of got tired of PowerPoint in the late 90s, and so my team and I build beautiful workbooks for training events, and at the back cover of every workbook is this Beatles quote from Abbey Road in 1969, and that is, and in the end, the love you take is equal to the love you make. And I think that applies to every mode of communication. What you put out is coming back your way. The love you take is equal to the love you make. And what you know what you're doing, Denise, I just want to thank you. Think of all the listeners and all the people who have been interviewed, and you're a conduit. You know, you're a medium for for all these messages that help this world be a better place. So I want to thank you. I notice how you set others up for success. It takes a lot of courage to do that. You put the spotlight on others instead of yourself. And I just admire it very much. So when I was checking out the podcast and listening to a few episodes, I thought, wow, this is a perfect fit. This woman is communicating with courage daily.
You know, I my eyebrows kind of hit my hairline because I don't think it's courageous for me to do what I'm doing. I don't even know what I'm doing, to be honest. The reason I started this podcast is, isn't that terrible? The reason I started this podcast 15 years ago was because I am a highly committed introvert and there are no pictures of me on the internet. You're not going to see me on live stream or YouTube. Ain't gonna happen, hon, as we say in the South. But I started this podcast because I wanted to meet people like you. I wanted to have communication with people like you. And it's been an astonishing ride for me. To be honest, I look at all of my guests as mentors. Seriously. I mean, there's a reason why I invite certain people to come onto this podcast, because I know they've got a lot to share with me and with a huge audience. I mean, it's kind of selfish on my part, to be honest.
One way of looking at it, the humble way of looking at it, is to look at it that way. I see the courage in you, and it differentiates you from others. Many that we all know folks like this can't tell them anything, right? No, I'm good. I've got it. Talk to the hand. I already know. The rejection is one of the quickest ways. The defense mechanism of rejection comes up very quickly as people are offered constructive criticism or advice or learning opportunities, and you just keep coming across as the humble learner that you are, while you blend empathy and directness. And
humble,
you know,
learner.
If I had this, yes,
I love that. I'm writing that down.
Another
humble learner.
Another
thank you.
Move you're making, as our listeners listen, watch how Denise interacts with guests. She's blending two things we all need. You're blending two things we all need, Denise. We need directness, so we need to be brave to say the hard thing sometimes, to be vulnerable enough to say the hard thing, brave enough to say the hard thing. And we also need empathy and respect for others' feelings. So as we say the hard thing, we don't injure the other person or leave them feeling less than. And it is I picture someone walking a tightrope. It is really tough because each of us either leans towards being empathic and respectful and careful with others' feelings, or we lean towards bluntness, directness, and it's good to know, ask yourself right now, which am I better at, saying the hard thing or making sure that I don't offend people? And you know what the pro moves communicators are doing? They are being both direct and caring about how their words are received. And that's what I hear when I listen to your podcast.
And I'm so glad you said, and thank you.
Job.
I'm so glad you said that because I do both. I'm very direct. My mother always said that I had no filters. She wasn't kidding. She would warn people, do not ask Denise a question that you do not want the answer to. I can't help you. Just don't ask her. You know?
I love it.
But I never go out of my way to really hurt or damage people. But if I've got something to say, it's going to get said, I hope, with kindness and compassion.
Mm-hmm.
But not always. Sometimes I just blurt it out and go, geez. I'm sorry.
It's true for all of us. Let me correct that. How many of us are willing to go back and say, honey, I shouldn't have said what I said last night when we were arguing. I'm sorry. Please forgive me. I mean, it's taken me forever. And whether it's your honey, your significant other, your kid, your parent, your coworker, your employee, and it's not always just what you said. Research supports it. How we say things. I joke with my seminar participants. Hi, everybody. You know, we're going to be together today from 9 a.m. to noon. We are studying giving and receiving feedback or managing stress and change or whatever the topic might be. And I'm hopeful that when you get home tonight and you're having dinner and someone says, how was your day? You'll be able to say, you know, I participated in a 3-hour seminar about communication. Or you might say, I participated in a 3-hour seminar about communication. Same words. It's the tone that matters. I'm out to earn the enthusiastic, this was a good use of my time tone. So we have ways, don't we, of saying things without actually saying the words. Let's all try to own our tone. And as I sit here speaking with you and sipping my tea, I'm looking up because I'm concerned that lightning might strike me as I preach about this stuff. They say that those who need to learn something, they might study and research it and teach it. I think that's me. These things get away from me. I'm trying to love myself anyway, but I'm working on my tone, and my tone can be very supportive with coaching clients, college coworkers, less supportive, less empathy with those closest to me. And I fear this
including
will be one of
yourself.
My great regrets.
Including
oh, including
yourself.
Myself.
I just
Good
wrote
point.
This question down, and I wanted to ask you, Michelle, self-communication, because it's, to some degree that's what we're talking about. Does this happen to you? And I'm willing to bet that it does. You will say or do something that nobody seemed to take umbrage at, but it bothers you. It kind of settles in your stomach, and you're going, I don't know if that came out the way I meant it to come out. So I will just say, okay, I'm going to go back and revisit this and explain to whoever I might have offended, because I am blunt, I am direct, no filters, and say, listen, I hope that that didn't come out the way I think it did, and this is what I really meant to say. It's not easy to
there's
do.
There's that courage.
But you have to
there's
do
that
it.
Courage.
It's self-communication. How well are you communicating with yourself, and how well are you paying attention to yourself? And I bet you do the same thing.
I do. I've had some mindfulness training from Dr. Jonathan Walker, and he had us, his students, he had us document what we would say to a friend who was going through a tough time. And I came up with, jotted a few sentences, and I came up with, you've got this. Think of what you've already lived through. You have a beautiful heart. You're strong enough to do this. I believe in you, all these things. I'm good at lifting others up, and I'm sincere, and I see their potential. And he said, now, you having a hard time, you making a mistake, what do you say? Immediately I wrote down, you need to get your shit together. Wow. I'm not that good of a friend to me when I'm having
no filters.
A hard time.
I love
and
that.
I want to challenge you on that, by the way, ma'am. You have filters. You're saying no filters, but I think you have some filters. And I see you use them. I mean, I don't see you use them. I hear you use them when I listen to your podcast. You have some filters. You're very brave. So you
They're
don't,
minimal.
If you have something to say, if you see something wrong, you don't, you know, I could see that you might not be a person who would think on it for a week. You'd probably strive to correct it right quickly. But I think you're very professional and you certainly do use filters, but I'll just give that to you to consider.
See, this is why I love you. This is why we get along so well. You're calling me out. I really don't have much in the way of filters, but I am more aware, again, as a result of this podcast. Seriously, I learned so much from people like you. I've been doing this, like I said, for 15 years. I have never walked away from one of these things at the end of the hour and say, well, that was a waste of time. I didn't learn a darn thing.
Good.
My goal for each one of these episodes is to learn at least one thing new. And I keep, you know, I've got colored index cards in front of me. And I have index cards laid out for each guest, and I've got certain colors for certain things. And at the end of it, I've learned multiple things. And I'm keeping track as I'm listening because I really want to know, what did I learn and what can I share with others? So thank you.
Sure, and it certainly comes through as sincere. I wanted to mention that this defining, we're kind of talking about the second hidden challenge, which is defining, putting too much stock into our assumptions and being too quick to judge. I think we need to add to that. I was thinking of that meant others, too quick to judge others when I wrote the book. Talking to you today is helping me see that defining, being too quick to judge also happens in the way we judge ourselves. So
oh, I
an
think
executive
we're the worst
exercise,
at that.
Yeah.
So you think we're the worst judge? I mean, seriously, I will tell anybody who will listen.
Some have a blatant sense of self.
Yeah, well, no. You know, I'm really rough on myself. I think we all are. And we all have that internal voice that we may, you know, hear just internally or we may be saying it out loud. And I'm telling you right now, Michelle, if anybody spoke to me in a Walmart parking lot the way I speak to myself, I would need bail money. Seriously.
Mm-hmm. Isn't that interesting? So, but we can get away with it because it's not usually documented. It's not.
I know.
We don't see it. So this exercise that we have coaching clients complete sometimes is I ask the client to just, I see them monthly usually for a couple of months, and they get a goal plan after each session. And between sessions, I offer 5 or 6 pieces of homework, goals to complete. And they have the right to bless the goals or to ask me for edits because I'm not their boss. We often copy the boss so the boss can support the client. One of those goals is, please, just in a notebook or in Microsoft Word somewhere, whatever's good for you, document some of the things you say to yourself when you're unhappy with yourself, negative things you say to yourself, just document them. Try to catch them, and that is a tough thing to do because this stuff is insidious. It's just your mind wants to be in control, and the challenge is, can you control your mind? So let's look at the messages you send yourself, negative self-talk. Just write it down. See you in a month. Call me if you need any help. And then a month later, we get together again in person or by Zoom, and I ask the person confidentially, please share with me what you've written. One woman wrote, I'm a bad mom. That's the first thing I tell myself a lot. And I said, okay, well, I'm not a parent of human kids. I'm a dog mom and have been a dog mom. I'm not currently, but I can't wait to be a dog mom again. So you're going to have to help me because I don't have human kids. But I would think that a bad mom might not feed her kid nutritious meals, might not ever read to the child, might not give physical and verbal affection, might not want to see them grow into the best person they can be. She said, oh, I'm doing all of that. I said, are you a bad mom? She said, you know, I'm not a bad mom. I said, why'd you put that? Why do you say that? She said, I said that because I've been working late nights, and I know the kids want my attention, and I end up on screen, you know, on Zoom, and I'm having these meetings, and I'm not getting as much time with them as I would like in the evening. And I said, can we set a goal about that and maybe retire this tired, negative self-talk that's not even true? Yes. And she crossed that out. Then we went to the next one on the list. So the exercise is document the crappy stuff you say about you to you and then look at it in the light Hold it in the light. Bring your rational self to the forefront. Bring courage along, summon courage. Bring it along with you and say, okay, I'm going to look at these things I tell myself, and if it's not true, I'm crossing it off, and I can get it out of my script. So I've seen a lot of people let go of worries and negative self-talk just by being brave enough to document what you're saying. It really caught my attention when I documented, you know, you need to get your shit together. Like, wow, I would never speak to a loved one that way. How about something more like,
right,
you did your best, Michelle, and you flopped, but you didn't, not for lack of trying. Your heart was in the right place, or maybe my heart wasn't in the right place, and I let myself down, and I wanted to correct myself. It doesn't make me a bad person. I want all of our listeners to think about that. When you're telling yourself you're a bad person, you're in some good company. There are millions of others telling themselves they're a bad person. It's probably not true. Probably not true. You probably made a mistake. So we really, and I think women especially, need to work on the self-acceptance and self-love, although I have many, many male clients that struggle with negative self-talk as well. So how we communicate with ourselves is important too. Great point.
It is, and I'm so glad you brought this up. What I have taught myself, a couple of things I wanted to mention here. I love Byron Katie, and her question is always, is it true? Is it really, really true? So I have to ask myself that a lot. But what I have done is I will grab my phone, and once I have one of those really icky thoughts that flits through my brain, and I'm sick of it. I've heard it before, and I'm just bloody sick of it. I will grab my phone and repeat in my own voice, in my own words, to my phone what I just said to myself, and then I'll find a day when I'm thinking, okay, I need to dig into this. Why am I so cranky? What's bothering me? Why does my stomach hurt? And I'll listen to myself, and I'm like, oh, you witch. So off I go.
Uh-huh.
It's like, okay, we are not having that conversation again, because when
you're
writing it down is one thing for me, but hearing my own voice, which annoys me, I think I sound like I'm about to, you know, burst into happy birthday, Mr. President. I think I sound ridiculous. But hearing, I really do, but hearing myself talk to myself in that fashion is unacceptable. So I hope that helps.
Yes, until our hidden challenges like negative self-talk are recognized and addressed, we're going to have less fulfilling interactions. And I think that means we fail to connect with others in meaningful ways. So it's this idea of self-esteem that can keep us playing small and playing it safe too often. I'm not saying that playing it safe isn't important sometimes. Sometimes it's just not safe to be a courageous communicator, and you want to consider risk. And these chapters in my book are short. I know everybody's busy. It's hilarious, Denise. I thought, okay, I'm going to do it. It's time. I've thought about it for a long time. I'm going to take the sum of my knowledge, see if I can get into a short book. And it took me 4.5 years. And I think it was because it is a short book. So there's a short chapter about risks not to take. And I think there's some humor in there that our readers will enjoy. But our relationships might suffer from lack of trust or fear of vital conversations. The book is meant to help the reader see the world as having opportunities to improve. And it's everywhere. You know, I go to lunch. We have awesome service. And, you know, the server is one of those people who we're saying, I want iced tea without lemon. I want iced tea with lemon. I'd like the onion on the side. And we come up with all these specifications, right? I watch the server not write a darn thing down, and they come back with everything correct. And then I'm in a hurry to get to my next meeting. If I'm using my best communication, I will pause at the restaurant and say, do you have a manager I could talk to just for a minute? And this investment might take me just 2 or 3 minutes. They get the manager, and I say, I want to tell you what a great server we had today. Congratulations on hiring and retaining this person. They were wonderful. Have a good day. Extra 2 minutes, well worth it. Sticking my neck out, getting easier the more I do it.
I love that you do that. And, you know, so many people who are, I don't know, restaurant owner, server, they don't get they don't get a lot of positive feedback, I don't think, and they should, because they're serving us. You know, their job is to serve us at some level. They need those love letters too. They really do.
I think it helps a lot if you've worked in the service industry, and I will never regret all of my years as a server.
I bet. Well, and we're talking about, I have something else. I wrote down bad mom. I have so many questions. I'm scribbling them down, and now I can't even read my own writing. Okay, so, and I just mentioned a love letter. You said earlier that you included a love letter to conflict in this book. Let's talk about that,
yes,
because that may not make any sense just kind of stated boldly like that.
Okay, let's talk about that. I am picking up, do you happen to have that page number?
Thought I did. Love letter to,
okay.
I've got little stickies all over this thing. Hang on.
Okay. It's
love
a race.
Love letter.
I'm looking
at it. It's a race. Well, what the heck? I think I moved it. Well, go ahead and just wing it, and I'll find
it. I'll speak a little bit about conflict as we look for it. My master's thesis at Purdue University in West Lafayette was all about conflict, and I was researching and studying and teaching how substantive conflict, or conflict about real stuff that can be can maybe not even be solved but can be managed, makes our lives better, and how destructive conflict, which we call personalized, I don't like you, you don't like me, a war begins, you know, can be damaging to our very core. And I found it. It's in chapter 6, Denise, and it's on page 85.
I found
Could
it
I read
at that same
letter?
Moment. I was just
yeah,
about
found,
to tell you I found it, yeah.
You, okay, so it's a tie. Our race is a tie.
Well, I
I'll
had moved the sticky
okay.
to another chapter, so I'm so sorry.
No problem. So here you go, folks. Dear constructive conflict, we've known you all our lives. We've watched our elders acknowledge that you're vital to communication or refuse to. You were always present in our homes and schools. You will always be part of our work lives and personal relationships. You help us find our beliefs and push us to lift our voices for causes that matter. You reveal others' unique positions when we're brave enough to listen. Without you, we'd never admit that we see the world from one limited perspective, our own. Because of you, conflict, we've learned our way is not the only way. There's often more than one way. You remind us that those we see as dead wrong or out to get us may have positive intentions. What? You bring anguish at times, anger and shouting, but you should not be confused with abusive communication. You have the power to restore harmony. You allow emotional release when we can't find a solution and tears arrive. You encourage us to find coaches and counselors to guide us through rough waters. You help us identify our purpose. You encourage tough discussions that lead to higher ground with coworkers, friends, enemies, strangers, and families. You're inescapable. You're a worthy puzzle that requires brain and heart working together to solve. You shape our workplace culture. You shape our family dynamics. You're never the same thing twice. You keep us growing as communicators, and we're grateful. Love, Michelle. What a weirdo, huh? Who writes a love letter to conflict? But I feel it.
It makes perfect sense. And when I read it the first time, and now that I've read it along with you, I can't argue with any of it. I mean, I can't say, well, you missed a spot, like somebody watching you, you know, mow the lawn. You didn't miss anything. It's there. And the thing about conflict is so many of us spend so much time avoiding it. I'm not saying go hunt for it, but I'm saying you need to be aware of it and aware of your response to it. And if your response is not what you really think you want it to be, work on it. Get busy on yourself.
Right. Yeah, hey, listeners, I don't know if you're poker players. I am. I love to play cards. It is like a poker hand. Every human has 5 options in conflict. Let's see if I can get this right. And this is true for every human. You can compete, go for the win, make sure the other party loses, right? You can avoid, deny, or delay dealing with it. You can compromise, both people give something up. You can collaborate, which is work together to solve it. Or you can accommodate. And accommodate is, I will lose so you can win. And it might sound wimpy. It's not if you don't overuse it. You know, you want to use each of these, let's say, 20% of the time if we're making a pie chart. If you accommodate, you might let somebody try it their way, even though you think you know better, or you might say, I'm sorry. So in my executive coaching practice, we always, always start coaching clients with a valid, reliable personality assessment. And it's 164 multiple choice questions online. It takes them about a half an hour to complete. It takes my team about a week to get everything together. And then the client receives a 13-page report. And one of the most important graphs is, let's look at your conflict preferences. When you have a disagreement happen in your life, what's your favorite thing to do? And man, Denise, this opened my eyes 12 years ago when I first found this assessment and started using it because, oh my, I was competing like something crazy 68% of the time. So
didn't that wear you out, though? I mean, if I go head-to-head in competition with somebody,
it doesn't matter.
It wears me out.
As long as I could win, I would crawl to the finish line. I apologize in the book to ex-boyfriends. Who tried to tell me as they were walking out the door, you're impossible. You know, I can't win. You won't acknowledge when you're wrong. That's not true, I said, right, as they packed the bags. So it really helped me to see in a personality assessment, if anyone has the opportunity to do that, if it's a valid, reliable assessment, go for it. Bring your courage because you're going to read some things about yourself that you won't like. Then you'll read some things you will like because our strengths are wedded to our weaknesses. And then I looked at my other options. Well, what's this accommodate stuff? I had like a 3% score there, so I started studying that. Accommodate. Ah, let somebody else have it their way. Acknowledge when you're wrong. What's this avoid stuff? I had like a 2% rating there. That is, not every conflict has to be solved right now just because I'm immature. And I want it handled right now because my body is burning with frustration or anger or anxiety now. No, you know what the best time to talk about this might be? After work or this weekend or after we've both had time to calm down. So I saw, you know, quickly in my personality results what I was using. Or I guess you could also say that's a gift and a strength. If you want to buy a car, Denise, take me. I want to negotiate the best deal for you. I'll make sure you win, right? So I'm just trying to use my favorite methods for dealing with conflict in the right places and then practice the ones that come a little harder for me. And, yes, we do coach, you know, hundreds of people in different professions every year who test high in avoiding. And often it's because a lot of our conflict behavior for all of us comes from what we saw growing up. I think between the ages of 2 and 10, there's quite a bit of research to support the fact that we watch how the adults around us communicated when they disagreed, and we either replicate that or we might go the absolute opposite direction. But the point is we want our coaching clients choosing how they're going to handle conflict, not reacting, right, but responding.
And conflict is difficult to understand. It really is, because a lot of times there's a physical response. Most times there's a physical response. It either hits you in the gut, or I've actually gotten a pain behind my left ear because I know whatever this is, I'm about to have a migraine, and I don't want it. So I have to go do something about that. But it takes a long time to understand and deal with conflict in your own personality. And, you know, everything you're talking about, I've done, you know, my ex-husband said, you are impossible. Really? Well, let me tell you about you. That never ends well. So,
no, and we, you know, also there's some projection there. Let's do a fun exercise right now. Podcast listeners, think of somebody that frustrates you. If you're, with a group of people, maybe don't say their name out loud because we do this live in seminars. Please don't say their name. We're all sitting together. We're all from the same company. Think of somebody who frustrates you. Got it? At work or home? Any age? Okay. Now, one word, a descriptive word to describe something that bugs you about this person. And as that comes up, well, she can be, he can be, they can be, and it's annoying. Guess what? You are not able to see in others what you don't also possess in yourself. And this is the concept of projection. What bugs us about us, what hangs us up as communicators, we notice more in others and are often very happy to call them out about it, then we don't have to look at ourselves. Projection. And I struggle with it every day. So all of these hard communication things, that's why I wrote the book, because I'm not going to be here forever, but I've been thinking about communication pretty much 24/7 since I was about 4, and I have kind of tried to gather real-life stories and research and some humor and some vulnerability. I tell some stories that were tough to tell, and I put them in the book. All true. You know, no case studies that didn't actually happen or that you have to imagine. It's filled with real-life stories about real-life people that you'll come to know through the book. That's why I wrote the book, is because I think we could all use a coach, and certainly, Denise, not everybody can afford one.
No,
and not everybody works for an employer who's going to say, raise your hand if you'd like some communication skills coaching. So we needed something thin, you know, small, 100 and some pages that people could throw in their purse or their bag and read on the go. I really do hope it will help people.
It
and
is
I can't
easy.
Thank you enough for talking to me about it.
It's an easy book. Oh, you are welcome. And I warned you this would happen. I didn't get nearly as many questions or thoughts out that I wanted to, and I knew it was going to happen because it's such a fascinating topic. Can you come back, let's say, maybe the first quarter, you know, the end of the first quarter
yes.
of the new year, and then we can say...
I would love to come back.
Oh, good. And we can say, okay, what we talked about, where are we? And we should have some people who have gone and said, oh, I get it now. So we can have some questions about that, but I would love for you to come back, you know, at the end of the third quarter, I think.
At the end of the first quarter or third quarter?
First quarter. Ignore
first quarter.
Me.
Absolutely. Yeah. No, that's okay.
My communication today is not great.
What might be fun is, as we think about these four hidden challenges, which were hiding when we're afraid to show our weakness, defining, assuming, right, too much, being quick to judge ourselves, ding, 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 or others, rationalizing, which is talking yourself out of a scary communication pro move that might help you grow, or settling, and that's stopping it good enough instead of giving that little bit of extra in our communication. What if you and I both, real life right now, chose a goal for communication in any form, and then we check in with each other when we meet again on your podcast?
Perfect. I would love to do that. Okay. Are you still here?
Oh, sorry about that. Go ahead.
I said that's perfect, and let's definitely do that. Now, listen, you are joining me for the final broadcast, as I mentioned earlier, for 2022, and thank you for that. I mean, most people are like, it's the new year. I don't want to talk to anybody. Leave me alone. I almost got there myself yesterday. It's like, no, I'm good. But in chapter 3 of your book, and I found where I moved the sticky, you reference identifying what you want to change, and there's no better time than a new year for asking and answering that question. So let's talk about that when we come back.
Okay, let's talk about identifying what we want to change. Great. And to prepare, you and I and our listeners could maybe ask a couple people we trust who will be kind what they think we could work on as communicators.
Oh,
and I call that the feedback challenge. Maybe ask one or two people around you. And I've seen parents ask little kids, "Hey, honey, what do you like about when mommy or daddy talks to you? And what when we talk together, what do you like most? And what don't you like?" Right? And one of our coaching clients, a mom, you know, heard, "I like when you look at me." This is from her 4-year-old. "When we talk, I like when you look at me." "Okay, and what don't you like?" "I don't like it when you don't look at me." And she said to me, Oh, Michelle, that's fair. This four-year-old was the center of our world, and now we have twins, and they're two. So can you imagine?
Oh.
Okay, so how often does that four-year-old get the eye contact? Wonderful. This is a fantastic piece of feedback. Came from a four-year-old. You can ask a 94-year-old. Just ask somebody you trust, hey, I have an executive coaching assignment, you know, and that is ask a few people what they like and what they think I could do better as a communicator, and that will lead us to our next conversation.
I am going to, and I just wrote this down because you know already that I've got five favorite people in the world, and one of the top two is Jim Tunney, dean of NFL referees, and you like football. He's 93.
Okay.
He is my favorite person, honest to God, in the world. He's a fine, fine gentleman. That question is going straight to him. But he loves me. I don't know how honest he'll be, but we'll see. We'll see.
Right. And you could give people some time to respond. Some people are deep thinkers. I'll have to consider this, you might hear. Okay, and follow up with them once. If they don't get back to you, because let's be honest, it's a weird question. Folks can find all kinds of tools at our website that will help with this kind of thing and gobs of real-life coaches' corners. It's at these Q&As that people write in with real-life questions, and then I answer within three paragraphs because we're all busy. I try not to be too wordy. Folks can find that at www.gladioconsulting.com. Again, I know it's tough to spell. I was honoring my parents, my deceased parents, when I named the company. It's GLADIEUX, like x-ray. consulting.com. Lots of things there for you to check out. And I write a quarterly newsletter. I put so much time and heart into it, Denise, and it's meant to be uplifting once per season. You can sign up at the website to receive that. And I always also include a little music video. I haven't yet played on one of these music videos, but just a quick 2-minute, 3-minute video to start the newsletter. If people have time, start with some music. I'm an amateur bass player and I love rock and roll. So, and all kinds of music, love all kinds of music, but we put a little music in the newsletter. It's called The Breakdown. I should say it's called Breakdown. And we named it after the Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers song, Breakdown. So I hope folks will sign up to stay in touch.
I knew that. Well, Michelle, thank you. Before I let you go, and we are still recording, we're not streaming any longer, but we are still recording, so you know nothing's going to get lost. Do you have anything else that you'd like to share with the audience before I let you go?
Great question.
Where'd you go?
Yeah.
I lost her already.
I listen to a lot of podcasts, and I think what I want to do is I just want to thank you for the humble and direct and empathic way you lead these conversations. You're doing your own teaching, 15 years of teaching through this podcast. It's outstanding. And I guess I want to remind our listeners that started with one step, started with Denise saying, I feel a calling to this. And I'm going to try this as a communicator. She tried something, and look at how we're all blessed by it. So I would encourage our listeners to try something today as a communicator. And, I really hope they'll go get the book and let me know what they think. I hope they enjoy the pro moves in it.
Thank you. You are so kind. And it's been really fantastic speaking with you. And I thank you for all the terrific tips and the advice that you've shared with our audience. And I really look forward to having you come back in the new year. So before we say goodbye, I would like to remind our audience to be sure to look for us on iTunes, Stitcher, Amazon, honestly, anywhere else you consume your business podcasts. The truth is you can't throw a stick on the Internet without hitting your partner in Success Radio. So find us and take us along on your success journey. Michelle, thank you. Happy New Year, and I really look forward to having you back again soon.
Right back at you. Happy New Year.
Get your voice heard. If you would like to launch your own far-reaching podcast, contact Denise Griffiths at yourofficeontheweb.com and go to the podcast tab.